When I got out of the military in 2010, I realized that my people were still suffering. And I wondered, how could this be? How could I have been serving my country all over the world for all these years, over 20 years, and I come back and my people were still suffering? I wondered what happened. So I felt a need to take off my military boots and put my moccasins back on. My husband and I started a Native American church when I got out of the military. And our vision has been helping leaders first and bringing recognition to the contributions of our indigenous to help reduce suffering. Also, so I went back to school to help figure out what happened. When I was young going to school, what I was taught was that we as Indian people were savages. That's what I grew up thinking about myself, that I was a savage. But I've always known in my heart that this wasn't true. Before we were discovered, millions of our indigenous people lived here, and our land was free. It was free to us, and it was free to everyone. It's hard to imagine that now. But I think one thing that Americans don't realize is that we are actually foreign nations within the United States. We're not just minority groups of people that are just scattered across the country on poor reservations. We are foreign nations. We have our own government. We have schools there. As I transition my conversation over to my husband, I just wanted to play a drum here for you just a little bit as I talk a little bit to try to close out my part of my conversation. There's an idea that's circulating, the new idea of peoplehood. I would encourage you to look that up because that's something unique and distinct about us as Native Americans, is because of our peoplehood. And that's why you can't separate our sovereign beings and our sovereign freedom of our religion from us to Americanize us in the way that this government has been trying to do for a long time. So I'm going to transfer over now to my husband, Chris, and he's going to tell you his story.
My story is about being forced from my homeland under threat of imprisonment or a torturous death. I was a teenager in the late 60s and 70s, and I grew up in the county of Winchester, Virginia, where there were racial riots. With the draft, in order to supplement the draft, what our county, and I think a lot of other small towns around the country did this, is they would go to high schools and people who weren't doing so well in high school. And if they may be experimenting with marijuana or things like that, they would bring in these narcs, these state policemen, and do undercover. And they would bust them on something. And then they would offer them, if you go into the military, we'll just forget about this. Well, there wasn't a draft when I was a senior, but it worked pretty well. I want to preface this by saying that I'm not a victim, but I am a witness to what went on with me and how I saw a lot of things within myself that I needed to change. Like I had a very elitist and privileged idea of myself, even though I didn't grow up rich by any means. I'm a direct descendant of Peregrine White, which was the first child born in New England on the Mayflower. And my mother's side is Cherokee. So I thought, I'm entitled, been here longer, have more history. So I started speaking out about Native American rights. And I thought I had the backing of the government to freedom of speech. I smoked marijuana. It was pretty open. We would walk down the walking mall and smoke, and nobody said anything because they didn't know what it was at that time. There was an undercover cop who came to my house. I was living with my girlfriend. He wanted to buy some cannabis. I said, well, I'll make you a trade with something. Well, when I got to the crossroads, every deputy and even the sheriff converged on me. They went through my car. They did some damage to my car. The sheriff called me back to his car, and he told me, if you don't get the F out of Frederick County, we're going to burn you. I was trying to think of what that meant. He said he was going to burn me with, say that I sold marijuana or had marijuana, and I was going to go to jail. So nothing came out of that. That was at the end of February. And the second week of March, my name came out in the paper as being indicted for selling marijuana. four cop cars showed up at my parents' house. Well, I wasn't living at my parents' house, but I watched them go, and they went into the house. Don't know if they had a warrant or whatever, but they couldn't find me. And then so they came next door to look for me, but I had left. Then I went with my father to the sheriff's department, and I went in there with him, and he said, don't speak, let him speak. Well, I let the sheriff have it, but they didn't arrest me. I walked out of there. So a little time goes by, and I heard something from a little bird that said they're coming again. And this time they came to where I was living. From there on, I lived in the woods for like 2 months. I turned myself in, and I went to trial. It was not a jury of my peers. They were all from a certain area. Well, they found me guilty, and they brought in a bag of cannabis, which it looked like they had used that over and over again, how the plastic, you know, gets kind of filmy and stuff like that. District attorney suggested 40 years. First offense on anything. They were going to do what the sheriff said they were going to do. So I was out on $1,000 bond. Somebody with 40 years hanging over their head doesn't just go free until sentencing, but they let me go free. That was telling me that I would never make it to jail. So I left. We went to Texas because there was supposed to be work in the oil fields down there. I found a house that rented for $90 a month. All my elitism was dwindling because I had to stand in line with illegal aliens at 7-Eleven. They were getting picked up before I was. I didn't have a car. My wife's family was in the process of moving out to Oregon. Nothing was going on for us, really. So we moved to Oregon with them. And I was out there for about 2 years living as a fugitive. And the attitude of people, if they know that you are wanted by the law or something like that, it's their duty to turn you in. After 2 years of that, my wife left me. I got pulled over on a routine traffic stop. So they found out that I was a fugitive. And Virginia was coming after me with full force. And I had no voice. I had nobody that would stand up for me. But I read in the Bible where it says, in the last days, they'll put you in jail. And on the 10th day, you'll be let out. Well, that happened for me. I got out on the 10th day. Governor Vic Atilla, this happened over like 3 months, but he gave me clemency there. When they looked into my case, there was a lot of iffies. And then drove back myself to Virginia to face these charges. Turned myself in. The good old boy attorney, once I got in his office, he called the district attorney and says, guess what I've got for you? I've got Chris White. And it's like, I've just been handed over to the devil. Anyway, the laws had changed. Instead of the penalty being 5 to 40, it was now 1 to 5. The judge gave me the same thing. He gave me the maximum. He gave me 5 years because that's the most he could give me. In my trial, this is what they asked me. Where are you going to live? So I knew what my story was. I said, I've got a life in Oregon. And so I got the 5 years and then got out and did parole in Oregon. Never saw a probation officer. They just never contacted me. So that's, the story goes on, but that's the long of it.
Do you like to end on a song? I've got a song. It's When a Woman is Facing the Sun and to Welcome the New Day. It goes like this. When the